So up until the time of the Civil War, or a few years before that, the Black Laws, Ohio Black Laws, really had helped control the influx of black population into Cincinnati, into the state of Ohio. And with the demise of those laws, much of the rhetoric that politicians use centered around the seizures of the so-called black vote crossing the Ohio River. So Cincinnati is a great case study for the Civil War era because it really showed us how closely home front and battle front could be connected. Certainly we all can think of a million examples of where a home front area suddenly became a battle front during the war. But Cincinnati had felt vulnerable for a long time. It placed on the Ohio River. Its vicinity to Kentucky is certainly in 1861. Residents of Cincinnati were pretty afraid that Kentucky would secede from the Union and that they would be in the first line of fire. By 1862, they were feeling much more secure. Kentucky truly was going to stay in the Union, but they still felt a little nervous at times. And certainly, John Hunt Morgan, over and over again, something to do with Cincinnati feeling insecure. So in July of 1862, Morgan was making the first Kentucky raid up into the state. And about the time that riots broke out in Cincinnati, Morgan was approaching Lexington. So he's not yet stepped into Cincinnati, but was getting closer. So only about 90 miles away from the city of Cincinnati. People were pretty nervous, a lot of tension. And Cincinnati was also feeling vulnerable at the time because most of the men who wanted to join the army had done so by 1862. There weren't a lot of ready volunteers to go out and defend at that point. So the Cincinnati mayor, George Hatch, had actually dispatched about 120 policemen from the city of Cincinnati to go south, along with some Ohio troops to help defend against Morgan's raid. This left only about 40 policemen in the city of Cincinnati at the time. And again, this is still pretty early in the development of a professional police force in Cincinnati and in the city around the council. Other things that Cincinnati was dealing with at the time. Early in the war, the river economy really took a hit. So Cincinnati had already been starting to lose a lot of traffic to the railroads even before the war began, but by 1862, they were really feeling the pinch in terms of their river trade and the economy. It was starting to recover a bit. It wasn't quite as bad as it had been in 1861, but certainly they were concerned about their economic status at the time. And another issue that kept coming up over and over again, African American men were willing to work for lower wages than white laborers on the docks and on the steamships themselves. And many ship captains actually preferred African American hands on their boats because as they sailed down the river, they found that black boat hands were much more loyal to them. They would stay on the ship because they were afraid of being captured or re-enslaved down river, where white hands might jump ship and take whoever was paying the best wages. So the best wages were not coming out of Cincinnati. At this time, they were coming out of places like St. Louis. So the last thing these ship captains wanted was to be taking a crew down river and then have them all jump ship and do that. So there were a lot of rumors running rampant at the time of the war of 1862. A lot of talk about the draft. There might be a draft coming. Who will be drafted? How will this be carried out? Does the federal government even have the right draft us at all? Lots of rumors that Lincoln was going to free the slaves. This was a big concern for a lot of the working class frontmen along the docks in Cincinnati. especially that these three slaves would come north and take their jobs. This is a story they've been told for decades, really. Again, a lot of those earlier riots in Cincinnati had had some of these same fears of their roots. And another fear that was coming along was the rumor that black men would not only be freed, but they'd also be armed and would serve in the So these three fears were very important to those white men working in Cincinnati. So, along the docks in Cincinnati, June and July of 1862, there were pretty regular fights. Fist fights broke out pretty regularly, knife fights, hitting fellow workers with bricks, barricading ships so that they would not allow dock workers to unload a boat. This was pretty common practice in June and July of 1862. Many times, if African Americans were traveling around the city by themselves, they might get attacked by groups of white workers. And fear had tension had grown great enough in the city that on July 9th of 1862, about 200 African American residents left. They said the situation is too hot, we just need to get out of here. So the biggest riot started to break out on July 10th of 1862. Irish laborers blocked black dock workers from unloading their steam ships, and these group of men got into it, and riots broke out all over the city that day on July 10th. So crowds of as large as 100 might be fighting at various places. 8 riots, 10 riots breaking out in the city on that day. So most of the activity occurred down on the street closest to the wharf, here at the bottom of our map, and then started to move into African American neighborhoods as well. But on July 10th, most of the activity was along Water Street, Front Street, and out onto the steamship themselves. So a lot of times, black workers on the ships would actually have to jump into the river to escape crowds of Irish workers who were coming on board to attack them. So white workers also attacked a lot of homes in African American neighborhoods, and especially a lot of neighborhoods in Cincinnati where working class people lived and mixed and socialized together. So a lot of Irish and African American residences were mixed together. And some neighbors would turn on in an effort to actually, as they said, clean out the neighborhood of black people who lived there. Because there were only about 40 police in the city at the time, there was not a lot of arrests early in these riots. And again, sometimes the black dock workers had to take refuge on ships. Sympathetic crews might actually bring dock workers onto the ships and push off so that the Irish workers could not attack them. So a lot of violence going on at that time. The greatest violence took place on July 15th. So this was an organized attack. Both black residents and Irish residents said that they were preparing for what they called a pitched battle in the streets that night along the docks and into Buckstown, which is marked with a star there, which again was one of these neighborhoods for both Irish and African Americans lived, worked, a lot of saloons, brothels in this area of town. So the Irish vowed to clean out the black residents of this neighborhood. About 1,000 working class white rioters entered Buckstown, broke windows in all the buildings they could find, shot in houses, set churches on fire in that area. Houses and saloons were gutted by fire, and there was a pretty vigorous black defense. So a lot of shooting out of windows. The women and children had actually been cleared out of that section of town because they needed some food. So, as far as we know, only 2 people died that night. Surely there were probably others. But eventually the Irish pulled back out of there because all the street lights had been shut out, there were no lamps anywhere, and they just got too afraid to go. So that's actually what put an end to the wild beast event. So we have to think, what is this riot about? Why has this been going on for so long? These sorts of fights going on in Cincinnati over the summer. The Cincinnati Enquirer called it an irrepressible conflict. Of course, this is very familiar to all of us. The Enquirer said that the riot grew out of a difference between white and colored hands upon steamboats because the black workers were one of the smaller races. Here was a conflict, perhaps an irrepressible conflict, between two systems of labor. The representatives of one system of labor chose the irrepressible conflict into the field of civic warfare and resort to cudgels and taking stones was the consequence. So, of course, the Empire is invoking the famous speech of William Seward, where he talks about the irrepressible conflict, right, which is the system of slave labor versus free labor, and the statement that the nation will have to become entirely one thing, either an entirely slave-holding nation or a free labor nation. And the Empire went on to say, this is not just a between systems of labor, this is between classes of laborers, right? Between white laborers and black laborers. And this is a time when the Irish are still very covetous of that turning point, right? Wanting to be included in this larger racial categorization of white. William Garrison Taper, the Liberator, reprinted a letter to the editor where he said that the Irish workers claimed that employees along the board had taken the Negro by the arm and given him the place of a white man. The result has been a terrible riot. So it's pretty much unanimous in the city of Cincinnati. This is about the right to work. So who can control these types of jobs? And the fear continually was white men did not want to work alongside black men. They didn't want to lose their jobs to black men, but they definitely didn't want to work in the same workplace at this time. So, three major fears that people were dealing with at this time. Again, the fear of a military draft. Is it going to happen? What would it look like when it happened? Fear of emancipation. Lincoln's going to free the slaves was something that was repeated over and over again. And then what would happen with those free slaves? Would they come north and take jobs? And or would they join the army? These are three fears of people. So this riot really was about draft resistance before there was even a draft. And it was about emancipation before the Emancipation Proclamation had been released. So this is really setting the stage for, again, a lot of these same issues at once in future riots as well. So let's take a look at the draft, first of all. White workers, especially white men, were afraid of being forced to fight to emancipate slaves, free slaves who would then come north and take their jobs. This was a common concern. They did not want to work alongside black workers or former slaves, and they did not want to march alongside black workers or former slaves. And again, by mid-1862, most people who wanted to join the army had done so by this point. The men who were left in Cincinnati were resistant to joining the army. Did not want to do this. We know Ohio has a very active Copperhead movement, which is gaining power in 1862. And again, many people believe that the federal government was overstepping its bounds simply by thinking to implement the draft. The state could volunteer people to fight for the army, but the federal government did not have the power to force them to put forward men to fight for the union. And again, white workers are continually having this idea, why would we want to go be forced to fight to free the very men who are going to come to fight? So a couple of important acts, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with the Second Confiscation Act and the Militia Act, both passed by Congress again on July 17th. So during the same 2 week window where all these riots are taking place, especially in the Midwest. And most people saw these acts as necessary for the prosecution of the war. That they might not like them, but they understood for secrecy why this was an important move for congressmen, and then these were signed by Lincoln on August 17th. The Confiscation Act said that the president could employ as many persons of African descent as he may deem necessary for the suppression of this rebellion. A lot of people felt very nervous about this word employ. What did that mean exactly? If you can employ people of African descent, what would that look like? The Militia Act then allowed African Americans to offer their services as manual labor in laws and camps. And any man who had been enslaved by Confederates, he and his family would earn their freedom if they volunteered for the Union cause. So a lot of people, again, saw this as the first step towards arming black soldiers. If you have these men working in camp, who's going to stop them from taking a shovel out of their hands and pulling a rifle and nursing them again? So the Militia Act also authorized Lincoln to call up 30,000 volunteers, and there was then this idea out there, if Ohio men did not enlist, they would be forced to suffer the shame of the draft. So there was a slight uptick in voluntarism at that time, just because men didn't want to have to say they didn't have to. They'd rather be volunteers. And this is true for the state as well. That Ohio didn't want to be embarrassed enough to have to go to the draft. So the Inquirer again said on July 20th, it comes to this. Shall we go ourselves, or shall we allow the blacks to go? Choice must be either they needed to volunteer or they were going to the federal government, might well arm blacks. So again, these fears of working alongside blacks also came hand in hand with fears of being forced to serve in the army alongside blacks. So by July of 1862, a couple of different generals had taken it upon themselves to arm African Americans and make that move. And again, Lincoln made them back up. In May of 1862, General David Hunter had armed former slaves in South Carolina. And again, pulled back from this. But many people were pretty certain this is coming. There will soon be arming black soldiers. And African Americans had been volunteering to fight from the very beginning. They wanted to serve in the war, they had been turned aside over and over again. In Ohio, Governor David Todd had told the delegations from Cincinnati that, he said, do you not know that this is a white man's government? The white men are able to defend and protect it, and that to enlist a Negro soldier would be to drive every white man out of the circle. Again, this fear of them working side by side was so potent that they said if we allowed the blacks to win, that would be the end of problems at that point. So Frederick Douglass wrote Jason Eckmo Septembo saying, it is remarkable that these demonstrations, these riots that have taken place around the country, that these demonstrations of hostility came along about the same time when it is improbable that the necessity of the government would lead to arming the Negroes in common with others to fight the battles of their country. So Frederick Douglass was saying, this is not coincidental. People started attacking African American workers at the same time they thought they might have to fight alongside them. And the fear of this bringing any sort of equality. This idea that black soldiers would be equal to white soldiers, that black workers could be equal to white workers. This was something that was very terrifying to a lot of, especially working class whites at the time. So, the fear of emancipation is what looming out there. African Americans have believed from the very beginning that this was a war for emancipation. They've been actively leading to the UN, who weren't paying themselves during this time. What nobody could know at the time was that on July 22nd, Abraham Lincoln had shown the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation to his cabinet as in the same window when all these riots were taking place around the country. But of course, he didn't release that until after the Battle of Antietam. But the rumors are out there. Newspaper editors are talking about it repeatedly. Politicians are talking about emancipation. Many people are saying it's only a matter of time until some sort of emancipation is going to take place. And through the prosecution of this year. And again, they might see things like this, which is not in Cincinnati, in Alexandria, but groups of dockworkers like this and say, this is the Black Force. This is exactly what we have been hearing. Our jobs are in danger. So Midwestern states had taken active measures to block immigration. It was part of the Indiana Constitution by this time. In June of 1862, Illinois had passed on a special ballot the amendment to the state constitution prohibiting Black immigration into the state of Illinois. So Ohioans look around and say, they can't go into Indiana, they can't go into Illinois, where does this come from? At least Ohio. So in the summer of 1862, the Ohio legislature was flooded with more than 30,000 petitions from citizens, begging them to prohibit Black immigration into the state of Ohio, asking them to forbid Black settlement of all sorts. The Ohio legislature actually did a census during this time, which, as a historian, I'm so glad they did. Was this true? Was there really this flood of African Americans across the Ohio River? The census figured out fewer than 2,000 African Americans had migrated into the state of Ohio during this time. Many of them were children, and they did all tend to settle in Black towns or Black neighborhoods. So the actual population layout of the state did not really change all that much. Again, a favorite rhetoric of Democratic politicians and newspapers was this so-called Black Force, that they were going to be coming. And at the state convention in July of 1862, they passed a resolution stating that the Republicans were just scrambling to overrun the North and have those be competitive for these jobs, thus degrading and insulting their manhood by placing them on an equality with Negroes in their occupation. So this is not a case of uplift for African Americans for those Indian people. This was a downgrade for white workers that would place them as equal to these jobs. And again, the fear is this would upset the entire social order, where white workers are really trying to cling to any status they can get in this society. Much of the status comes from being white. So place in equal jobs or in equal military service with African Americans was a frightening thing for a lot of the men. So what did the African American population of Cincinnati, how did they respond to this? So some of the more elite citizens, pictured here at the opening of the first Black high school in Cincinnati, which really actually was a leading education system in the state of Ohio at the time. But some of these same people were involved in drafting resolutions and petitions to the city council, to the mayor, to the governor of the state, asking for some sort of help in putting down these attacks on Black workers in the city. So they appealed and said, if we remain quiet under the outrages, the mob attributes it to cowardice and redoubles its violence. If we resist, we are called violent and disorderly. Catch 22. We can't fight back, or they blame us for the riot. And if we don't fight, they just attack us. What are we going to do? We need outside help in order to do this. So finally, July 16th, the by social and political elite of the city tried to raise a home guard. Some men who had come forth and helped put down the riots that had been continuing around the city. And the worst rioting in Cincinnati lasted about 8 days. But again, fights had been occurring long before and long after. When they called for volunteers to come put down these riots, they called for 1,000 volunteers. Fewer than 100 men showed up. They had a really hard time even getting volunteers to help put down riots in the city. And a lot of them said, these men are too busy rioting. They're too busy urging on rioters to help them defend the city. And the Gazette, a Republican newspaper, called them out and said, there are hundreds of men in the city who are not satisfied with employment, good wages, and instead they'd rather spend their time attacking defenseless men, women, and children. Why would they do that? Why spend your time attacking these innocent people when there is so much rebel blood to get? Wouldn't it be better than spending this energy fighting against Johnson Morgan or other Confederates rather than people in their own city? So what is the thing that really finally put an end to these riots? What's the thing that finally got volunteers to turn out and put an end to the violence in their own city? It was the fact that the black people of the city organized the militia. That they were armed, they were parading the streets, and black working class people were ready. They basically dared the Irish to come into Bucktown another night. They paraded with their rifles and their knives out in the middle of the day repeatedly around the surrounding streets. And this again was the worst fear. And black people in the streets of Cincinnati, how are they going to react to this? So this company of about 50 men, the Inquirer said that they seemed anxious to have a battle with the Irish oppressors. They were daring them to come out. And the police arrested these men and disarmed them so that they were not allowed to carry weapons in the city. And then we used it. So they're sent back into the neighborhood, but now without their weapons. So at that point, that is when white volunteers finally came forward to form a militia to supposedly put down the riots, which had already basically been taken care of by just having some of the participants. So, again, the fact that these were armed black workers, the same men who were competing for jobs, the same men who wanted to volunteer and fight in the Union Army and been denied, and the same men that they have been fighting their own jobs for many days. When those people armed, this is when white workers finally came out and joined the home guard. That's the same time that the city got, or the city council finally appropriated funds and said, we need money if we're going to have an effective home guard. Let's put forth money to fund this group. Some of the rifle companies that basically had been defunct or been incorporated into other Ohio companies or regiments, they were reborn at this time. Suddenly, the enthusiasm to join the ranks of rifle companies was huge, and they said we're forming these rifle companies for the protection of Cincinnati from invasion and for the quelling of any riots or disturbances that might occur in our midst. So suddenly white men are turning out in force to put an end to any violence in the city. About a month later, General Kirby Smith took Lexington on September 2nd, moving towards Cincinnati, which is the talk that's coming up, the laws of defense of Cincinnati, in August and September of 1862. The famous Black Brigade of Cincinnati was formed at this time. Black men, the same black men who had been volunteering all along to fight for the Union Army, they were impressed in the service. They were basically rounded up and put in jail until they could be grouped together and taken over across the Pontoon Bridge into Kentucky. Wallace was the one who said, this is not the proper way to deal with these men, these men are willing to work. So he gives them a black commander that can reorganize, or commanders within, gave them a sympathetic white commander, but then allowed them to organize within their own ranks. And the Black Brigade served from September 4th through 25th in northern Kentucky, digging entrenchments, building roads, and performing other manual labor to assist in the defense of Cincinnati against the weakness in New York in Kentucky. The Black Brigade did not receive any payments from their service until they kept needing more workers. And finally, the city had to offer pay to the white workers to come out and work to build the city entrenchments. At that point, the Black Brigade did start to receive wages, about $1.50. And again, this is the exact fear that these white workers had had all along. They're working alongside Black laborers, and they're getting paid the same wages as Black laborers. And this is a step for the Black military too. But the same fear keeps coming back again and again. So the pattern really was set. In riots in Cincinnati and other places throughout the Midwest, the pattern was set in 1862. The New York draft riots was very much, they were very much about work and about anti-Black violence. So during the New York draft riots, one of the ongoing battles that took place over many days were Black and white job workers fighting it out for the right to have jobs in New York State. So the same, the trifecta of fears, Army Black workers, or Army Black men fighting alongside Black men, having them take a job, and emancipation. All of this, and the draft, obviously. All of these patterns were set at the time, and so Cincinnati gives us a good glimpse of what is to come in the most brutal way.
About this fear of Black workers taking their jobs.
The reality was there were tons of jobs to be had in New York because all the men were out fighting wars. So they actually needed tons of workers. Wages actually skyrocketed in the North during this time, and especially in the Midwest. Farmers were begging for anybody to come help them and paying outrageously with like $7 a day when a normal wage or even a decent wage was $1.50. So in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio at this time, the problem often being these were not always jobs in the city. The city jobs were harder to come by. And to get men out of the country where there was tons of employment was a harder thing. So I think abolitionists knew that there would be resistance. Because they had the same rhetoric that they were firing up, right? So it's sort of these two rhetorical machines going at it, to some extent ignoring the people whose lives it was actually impacting, right? Because Republicans wanted someday to have black voters, wanted to have support from African Americans. Democrats really wanted to have support from Irish voters.
Just a twist on that. The abolitionists were in large part old wine winning families who didn't think much of Irishmen anyway.
Right. Right.
They thought that the signs all were winning jobs available to Irish people now thought.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
They could, marriage would justify, they would have their fears would justify. They were not being treated equally.
Yeah, oh yeah. The Irish were definitely not being treated equally. And again, this is sort of the two groups at the lowest status in society fighting it up for who was going to be really at the bottom. And the Irish was desperate to not be the bottom.
Did most of the black population then stay there in the Cincinnati area?
What?
And continued on?
What happened throughout the course of the war, and especially after the war, the black population of Cincinnati did grow pretty substantially after the war, but the whole city grew. And that's pretty true for most states, that the entire populations of cities were growing after the war, and so the percentages actually didn't change that much. The people who migrated during the war often just passed through Cincinnati and moved further north up into what they perceived and what typically was the friendlier part of the state. Into rural Ohio, into towns further north, like Wilbur Forest.
Were there efforts to educate these people?
Absolutely. Again, Cincinnati, the black system of education in Cincinnati actually was enviable compared to what white school children were getting in Cincinnati because of the intense organization. Cincinnati had a pretty substantial black business and for social elite population to really organize. And again, a lot of these people have come from other places. So one of Thomas Jefferson's former slaves, Peter Fawcett, was instrumental in the black education system in Cincinnati.
You mentioned New Orleans
and
maybe
tell us a little bit about it. Yeah, so New Albany had about 3 days of riots that sort of intersected with what was happening in Cincinnati. And that started out basically as a street fight between a couple of black men walking down the street and some white men who said that these black men were dressed too nicely. And it sort of started as a fist fight there. Shots were fired. One of the white men was killed, although those black men were not armed. So how he was killed was difficult, but and then again it was this effort to sort of clean out the black sections of town. So that went on for about 3 days. And what to answer your question a little more fully, in cases like this with a riot, often the black population would flee to the countryside and wait a week or two, and then start to come back in. So again, a lot of people had left businesses there, they left homes. They didn't want to abandon the city entirely. They just needed to get out of the city and then might come back.
kind of following up on that, when you showed the map in the beginning, besides the Albany, it looked like there might be two or three other places in Indiana or very near Indiana.
Yeah, so there were other sorts of grass resistance that took place during the war, where sometimes it started with attacks on enrollment officers, or people might come to the aid of enrollment officers. So again, I tried to stick mostly with things that I would consider riots, like 10 or more people on each side involved. And yeah, so throughout Indiana, let me actually just go back there and we can take a look. A lot in Illinois, a lot in Ohio taking place. So Evansville had some rioting right at the end of the war, where there were a couple former slaves who were accused of assaulting a German woman in Evansville. And clean out the black section of town. Yeah, so I've got Evansville, New Albany, up some in Putnam County. We've got Charleston, Illinois, right on the border there, with where the Union Army and Copperheads spotted out, and Kuhn and Charleston. Yeah, Toledo, Detroit, Milwaukee. That one incident in New Albany, yeah, a lot. Many of them had served both black and white clientele, and during the end of the war, even before that, they were not sure the black clientele because they refused their right to be in the white. So they had to be called for white. And not for anybody else. So, yeah, it, I mean, it was important to them to make sure that there was no hope in the state. And for the school district, they depended on white support, white philanthropists who would help fund. So they didn't want to do anything right there either.
No questions.
Yeah, I'm just going to...